The way I'd like to start this commandment is to read the text and then offer three vignettes. And I'll explain them in just a moment. But first, Exodus chapter 20, verse 12. Honor your father and your mother, that your days may be long in the land that the Lord your God is giving you. Honor your father and your mother. Well, I'd like to start with three illustrations, three case studies, three vignettes. And the reason I'd like to start this way is because I don't think that the difficulty in this commandment is really understanding what it means. Although we'll talk about it. I think the difficulty in this commandment is understanding how we're supposed to apply it. And we'll spend the greatest amount of our time there. So let me start with three stories. The first is a story of a 6-year-old. The next is a story of a 36-year-old. And the last one is the story of a 66-year-old. Let's begin with the boy who is 6 years old. We're just going to call him a disobedient boy. We'll name him Johnny. Probably has nothing to do with the fact that we have like 16 Johns in this building, but we'll just name him Johnny. And Johnny is with his mom. They're getting to Walmart. And I want to suggest to you that there's a Johnny in every Walmart. Johnny's 6 years old. He has fire red hair and freckles. He has a mischievous twinkle in his eye and a sinister grin that says, "I want life to go my way." Well, all of this comes very quickly to the surface when those sliding glass doors open up and Johnny sees that plastic horse, that little ride right there in the opening of Walmart where you put in 2 quarters and the child gets 30 seconds of great fun. Well, Johnny sees this horse and begins to bolt towards it when his mother calls out and says, "No, Johnny, let's get into the store. I'm in a hurry." But Johnny doesn't pause for a second. He continues on his path straight to the plastic beast. He hops on top, and with a huff, he declares, "I want to ride it." Now you're standing nearby watching this whole thing unfold. The mother looks at the little boy and says, "Johnny, get off of that horse and get into this store." He crosses his arms. He scowls his brow and says, "I want to ride." At that point, the mother pulls out her knowledge of mathematics. Oh, yes, she's very, very skilled in counting all the way to 3. You're watching this unfold. "Don't make me count to 3, she says to him. 1, 2, this is where her knowledge of fractions comes out. 2.5, 2¾. She won't give in and say 3. Instead, she goes up to the horse and is about to grab him by the arm and dismount him from the steed. But just before she grabs his arm, he takes a deep breath. And you know what's coming next. She grabs his arm. He lets out a cry. "You're hurting me!" She looks around to see if CPS is anywhere nearby. She lets him go. Reaches into her purse in frustration. Digs around, finds 2 quarters, pops them in and says, "Well, fine, you're not getting any dessert tonight." As though she won. You know, it's like, carry a little bit of my pride. She backs away from this disobedient boy and nearly bumps into you. She makes eye contact and says, "I don't know what to do with the boy. I wish there was some book that would teach him how to behave." Now, what do you say in that moment? What do you say to the mother of this disobedient boy? First story is about a boy who's 6. The second story is about a woman who's 36. We'll call her the disrespectful daughter. You go out to lunch with your friend. You're there just to get a little bit of the girl's time away. You've left the kids at home. You do the chit-chat thing about the this, that thing, and whatever you ladies do while you sip your tea. And in the middle of that is when your friend begins to talk about her parents. Oh, they're coming for a visit, and I don't know why. All they do when they come is make me feel rotten. Nothing ever seems good enough, she says. The audacity. They try to clean my house. I mean, I go out for a little walk and I come back and my pantry's organized. I mean, who needs their pantry organized, she says. They try to tell me how to teach my kids. They're teaching them their arithmetic and they're telling them all about geography as though I can't do that myself. My mother even offered to let me go exercise. Now, what's that supposed to mean? She says to you. Well, she goes on and on talking to you about her parents. And it seems as though there's a dam of built-up resentment that's about to collapse. You try to pause and stop her. You say something like, well, it can't be all that bad. Oh, that was the wrong thing to say. She begins, you don't know the half of it. They're the most conceited, selfish, pig-headed idiots you've ever met. They put on this smile, act all goody-goody. It's garbage. I don't even know why they're coming. She looks at you. Well, you're into all that Bible stuff, Jesus stuff. What do you think I should do? Now, what do you say in that moment to this disrespectful daughter? So we have a disobedient boy who's 6, a disrespectful daughter who's 36, and then the last one's going to be a man who's 66. We'll find him on the golf course. We'll call him a dismissive son. You'll see as I play out the story. He's on the golf course. He's golfing with you. You've recently earned your retirement, and so has he. You worked in the same company together. This man was known for his frugality, the saving of his money, and the expenditure in wisdom at each point. He had been living his whole working career just so that he could approach retirement and live life the way he wanted. And it seemed as though things were working out. He had paid off his house. He bought a new car with cash. He even used his rainy day fund to buy a brand new boat and ATV. He didn't need the rainy day fund anymore because he had 2 pension checks coming in, as well as Social Security, and he felt like it was time for ease. Well, there you are on the golf course, and on the 7th hole, your friend surfaces a sore spot in his life. He's having trouble with his aging parents. He's 66 years old. His parents are in their early 90s, and they're having physical difficulties. She's had a hip replacement. He's had some sort of valve put in. He says something to the effect of, I don't keep in touch as I should. I'm not sure what to do with them. They live out in the middle of Idaho in some shack. Well, he's got VA benefits. They can take care of him, he says. Oh, Social Security should kick in, that Medicaid, Medicare, whatever that stuff is. He's made his bed. He can sleep in it. They're not going to waste my retirement on their retirement, he says. Well, you're taken aback. You kind of look at him a little disconcertedly. He realizes his words have lacked a little bit of heart, and so he begins to backpedal. Well, what am I supposed to do, he said. Caring for them when they're the ones that are supposed to be caring for me. I'm not getting an inheritance from them, and I'm for sure not giving my inheritance to them. What would you say? We have a 6-year-old disobedient boy. We have a 36-year-old dishonoring daughter. And we have a 66-year-old dismissive son. What would you say? Well, I think it's in each of these circumstances, each of these stages of life, that the fifth commandment actually speaks to each of us. So let's read it again. Let's look at Exodus chapter 20, verse number 12. What would you say? Well, perhaps you'd say something like this. Honor your father and mother. What is it that we must do whether we're 6, 36, or 66 years old? We need to learn to honor our parents. What I'd like to do as we unpack this is I'd like to simply talk for just a moment about what it means to honor. I think we pretty much understand this, but we'll take just a moment to talk about what it means. But where I'd like to spend the majority of time is I'd like to talk about how we can practically apply honor in our lives. And then finally, why it's so important to honor mom and dad. So we'll look at the meaning, the application, and the importance. Those are our three stops along the way this morning. What does it mean to honor our parents? And I'd like to start this way. If you think this message is only for children, then you've missed what I've been saying so far. And actually, you've missed the context of Exodus chapter 20, because Exodus chapter 20 was primarily addressed to adults in the nation of Israel. And so let's just start by what it means to honor. The word honor in the fifth commandment literally means to give weight to or to regard as heavy. So literally, you could translate the commandment this way. Regard your father and mother as heavy. Now, if your parents are a little bit overweight, then maybe you'll remember this. You'll probably walk out saying, Pastor Lucas said the fifth commandment says to tell your parents they're fat. But that is not what I said. It is to regard your father and mother as heavy or weighty. We still use an idiom in our own language that really captures this idea. We talk about someone who's influential as someone who carries a lot of weight. They carry a lot of weight. It means they have a lot of honor, a lot of influence, a lot of power in the midst of this. And that's what the word honor really means, to give weight to or to regard as heavy. It was used in context where a subject would honor the king, or a soldier would honor their officer, or Israel would honor her Lord. It means to give weight to their position, to pay reverence, to submit to them, to respect them. And so in the fifth command, what we're really called to do is to give the recognition to our parents that they deserve. To give the recognition of their God-given authority over our lives, to respect them, esteem them, value them, care for them, submit to them. That's what this command speaks of. Now, sometimes we can understand a word by looking at its opposite, like what it tells us not to do. So if you're going to honor someone, the scriptures begin to delineate, it means you must not do things like this. So let me give you a few of the things the scripture says. Listen, if you're going to honor your parents, it means, Exodus 21:15, if you're going to honor your parents, it means you can't kill them. Okay, we got that one. But it also means, Exodus 21:17, you can't curse them. I wonder how many people have cursed their parents. Were you ever a teenager? Get in a fight with your parents, and next thing you know, there's a yelling match and a cursing match. If you're going to honor your parents, you must not curse them, Exodus 21:17. Proverbs 28:24, if you're going to honor your parents, you must not steal from them. If you're going to honor your parents, Deuteronomy 27:16, you must not scorn them. Have you ever scorned your parents? Have you ever spoken scornfully about them? In addition to all of that, the scriptures say, Deuteronomy 27, Proverbs chapter 30, you must not strike, insult, behave disrespectfully towards your parents. If you're going to honor them, you can't do that. Now, we could go into different stories. I could take each one of those points and probably tell you a news article about each one, but we're not going to do that this morning. I think we understand what it means to honor our parents. But I think we hover on this because we actually live in a culture of dishonor. We live in a culture where what's been cultivated is youth that dishonors their parents. And that's why at the very beginning, when I said, there's a Johnny in every Walmart, you chuckled. And it's because you know that in our culture, there's disrespect and dishonor all throughout the youth of our culture. And I would say beyond that, we dishonor and disrespect the elders of our culture. There are a great many cultures that we could learn from. Americans are off base when it comes to this. And what I mean by that is we disregard our elders. When people get old, we treat them like used cars. We want to hide them in the back, we want to junk them for parts, or we want to trade them in. Our culture is one of the few in all of human history that has treated elders this way, and it's wrong. We are not to do that. This commandment teaches us that we are supposed to honor our elders, specifically our parents. Let me just give you some stats. In a recent study, barely half of the American public believed it is the child's responsibility to look after their aging parents. So if we were to do a survey, 50% of the people would say, that's not my responsibility. That's not my concern. Let them take care of themselves. Let the government take care of them. Let somebody else take care of them. That's not my problem. Nearly half of Americans believe that. You go to the teen magazine. There was a recent cover of a teen magazine. It had this title: Do You Really Hate Your Parents? Like, who doesn't? Did you get my teen accent there? Like, who doesn't? And it went on to talk and give advice about how to deal with your detestables, meaning your parents. A Newsweek article recently reported that hospitals are turning into a, quote, dumping ground for granny. Do you know what they mean by that? The Senate Aging Committee surveyed hospitals, and nearly 38% of them said that they have upwards to 8 senior citizens who are dumped off at ERs with no contact information and no one that wants to take responsibility for them. A week. Dumping ground for granny. Nearly 50% of the over 45-year-old population in the U.S. think that their children will not take care of them in their old age. They look at their kids and they say, oh, I can't count on them. They won't take care of me. But is this a new problem? One author wrote this: youth today love luxury. They have bad manners, contempt for authority, no respect for older people. They talk nonsense when they should work. Young people do not stand up any longer when an adult enters a room. They contradict their parents. They talk too much in company. They guzzle their food. They lay their legs on the table. And they tyrannize their elders. Is it a new problem? Do you know who wrote that? Socrates. No, my friends, it is not a new problem. And that is why this commandment has relevance today. Honor your father and your mother. You know, it's interesting when we talk about the Ten Commandments. We break up the Ten Commandments into two tables. Love God and what? Love your neighbor. Love God, love your neighbor. And the commandments kind of break up that way. And that's how Jesus summarizes them later on. This is the first commandment that deals with loving your neighbor. And loving your neighbor rolls off your tongue. Love your neighbor as yourself. Say it. It's easy. Love your neighbor as yourself. And we love these metaphorical neighbors. These ones that exist somewhere out there, you know. Like if I come across someone who's a Jew who was mugged on his way down from Jericho to Jerusalem and happened to pass by, I'll be a good Samaritan. We say, you know, the metaphorical, be good neighbors. But actually, what happens in this command is it takes it from the metaphorical world to a very literal world, and it says, start loving your neighbor by loving people under your own roof, namely your parents. It is inauthentic to say, oh, I love my neighbor, but you dishonor your parents. It doesn't work. And so here in the fifth commandment, what's going on is we're beginning to understand, what does it mean to love my neighbor? And he starts in the home. Literally, loving your neighbor starts underneath your own roof. So what does it mean to honor mom and dad? It means give weightiness, reverence, esteem, value, care, obedience, and submission to your own parents. That's what it means. Now, I told you I wasn't going to spend much time on the meaning. I think we understand what it means. Where I'd really like to spend time is on the application. So we're going to move from meaning to application. How can we apply honoring our parents? And how can we apply it in a group like this where our ages are very diverse? We have children in here all the way up through seniors in here. How do we apply this commandment to our life? So what I'd like to do is I'd like to take the word honor. And I'd like you to think of the word honor like a big circle. And this word has a very large semantic range. I'm going to use some grammar terminology here. But if you're trying to understand the meaning of a word, words have different nuances of meaning. So the word honor is the large term, honor your father and mother. But what I'd like to do is I'd like to find three semantical opportunities to speak about what the word honor means and apply it to different stages of our life. And so honor means to obey. Honor means to respect. Honor means to care for. And so I'd like to take those three words and talk about different times in our life where these are very significant and help each one of us be able to walk out of here today with a way to apply this commandment. So I'd like to start with the first one. When it comes to honor, the child needs to learn obedience. So if you're a child here today, and what do I mean by child? Well, turn to Ephesians chapter 6. I'm going to show you where this commandment comes up again. Turn to Ephesians chapter 6. It's in the New Testament. This was a book written by Paul. Ephesians chapter 6 is in the midst of a section called the Household Code, where he gives instruction to different members of a household. He begins with husbands, then he talks about wives, and then he goes to children. Then he'll talk about masters and slaves. When you get to Ephesians chapter 6, you see that children are the ones he's talking to. They're the subject here. And he says, children. Now, let me stop. Some of you are teenagers, and you're saying, I'm 16, and I'm a man. And you try to keep your voice from cracking when you say that. You know, I'm a man, I'm a man, I'm a man. I've got a razor to prove it. You know, I mean, you're like, see this peach fuzz right here? This is, I'm a man. I'm not a kid. My friend, if you would stop for a moment and study this passage, and I won't take time to really unpack the entire thing, but if you stop for a moment, this is called a household code, and you have to fall into one of the categories. So either you're an adult, independent man who functions as a father or a husband, or you're an adult, independent woman who functions as a wife or a mother, or you're a child. So are you a husband, wife, or an independent adult? Are you? Then it means you're a child. My dad put it this way, as long as you live under my roof, you do what I say. Did anybody else get that? I'd like to know, who else got that phrase? It's not new. Bill Cosby, I brought you into this world. Come on, and I can take you out, right? I mean, we all know that. I'm happy you're 16, and I'm happy you have peach fuzz, but quite frankly, this is for you. In this context, you're a child. You're not an independent adult who pays your own bills. If you want to try it, go ahead. You see what a rent payment looks like. You see what car insurance looks like. You fill the tank with gas. You do your own medical care. You start going shopping on your own. You figure it out, all right? But if you're not doing all those things, then this is you. And when it comes to honoring your parents, what you need to really learn is obey. That's your key word, obey. That's what it means to honor. Children, verse number 1, Ephesians 6, 1, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother. This is the first commandment with a promise. He's referring back to the list of commandments. This is the first one out of the whole list that has a promise associated with it. So he's referring back to the Ten Commandments. When it comes to honor, children need to learn obedience. You need to learn to submit, to place yourself under your parents. Now, it's interesting to me when I think about children and parents. We actually live in a culture where people have intentionally tried to blur the lines between those two categories. I want to go back to this verse, verse number 1. It says, children, obey your friends in the Lord. Does it say that? No. Children, obey other children in the Lord. No, it doesn't say that. It says, children, obey your parents. There is a distinction between these two. And so, my friend, if you are a parent, you're meant to be a parent, not your kid's best friend. You're meant to be a parent, not their comrade. You're meant to be a parent, not their BFF. Let someone else be their BFF. You be their parent. And the children need to learn the distinction between those roles. I want to tell you, there are certain things, and I imagine you have these about your own life. I mean, maybe for you, it's when someone in the checkout line is still writing a check, and you're like, I know they call it checkout line, but we don't use checks anymore. And maybe that's the thing that really gets you, or maybe it's the person that still licks stamps, or maybe it's the person that drives 20 miles an hour in a 55 zone. I don't know what it is that just claws at your soul. But I'm going to tell you something. Something that claws at my soul is a child who doesn't know their place. It claws at my soul. It is like fingernails on a chalkboard to me when I see a child that doesn't know their place. You say, you're an oppressive man. Mean. No. Read the Bible, my friend. If you're a parent, get in your place. If you're a child, get in your place. Children, obey. Place yourself under and listen to. The Greek word there is hupakuo. Under, listen. Under, listen to your parents. Listen to what they say and do what they say. That's what it means. Sometimes I want to go up to parents and say, ma'am, sir, you're the parent. And what that means is you're in charge. Your 2-year-old does not have command authority. You do. Now take charge. Now, if you need that this morning, then I want to empower you. If you're the parent, take charge. I'll never forget a 3-year-old. I was blessed to be part of watching a group of kids. And this 3-year-old, I asked them to gently do something, something safe, something good, something for their benefit. They looked at me and defiantly said no, and then started telling me what to do. I looked at this little snip, and I bent down just like this. I said, you are 3 years old, and you don't know anything. And you will listen to me. And then I told them what to do. You see, you're mean. No, my friends, 3-year-olds do not have command authority. This is so important because we live in a culture where we think it's actually admirable for them to express themselves, to have self-identity. No, you know what it means? You have rebellious, disobedient children who don't understand authority. And parents, if you don't teach your children authority, they will never live under the authority of God. You may think this is about self-actualization and independent thinking, but you're mistaken. There is a theological truth that must not be missed. If you do not teach your children to live under authority, they will not live under the authority of God. And then you have lied to them about the most important thing in life. You're a disgraceful parent, then, if you do not teach them to live under authority. Who here, can I ask you something? Who here does not live under authority? Who here? You may be trying to rebel against authority, but I'm going to tell you something. If you go on I-15 and you decide you're going to drive like you don't live under authority, you will soon find out from the flashing lights behind you that you do live under authority. You do. We live under authority our whole lives. Why is it that we think we should let our children believe a mirage? They must learn it in our homes. Children, if they're going to honor, if they're going to fulfill this command, what they need to learn is simple obedience. I wonder sometimes if the dishonor that we see in our children is really a reflection of the dishonor that they see in us. You say, well, what do you mean? Well, God says things like this to us parents. He says things like, let every soul be subject to the governing authorities, For there is no authority except from God. And the authorities that exist are appointed by God. Romans chapter 13, verse 1. And yet our children hear parents that whine and complain about government, that break laws, that refuse to submit. I'm going to tell you, in so doing, you're teaching your children to dishonor authority. Or perhaps where God says, servants, be obedient to them that are your masters. And then parents come home and they undermine their bosses. They subtly disobey their supervisors and brag about it. They slander their commanders or their employers. And in so doing, they offer a poor example of what it means to submit. God says, obey them that have the rule over you and submit yourselves, for they watch for your souls, as they that must give an account, that they may do it with joy and not with grief, for that is unprofitable for you. Hebrews 13, 7. And yet, some people complain about the leadership of the church. They insist on their own way. They secretly undermine or criticize pastoral eldership over issues that are not doctrinal, over matters that are preference. And in so doing, they're teaching their children how to dishonor. I wonder sometimes if the dishonor we see in our children is really a reflection of the dishonor that's found in us as parents. If your child, what you're called to do is to learn obedience. My kids know three words when it comes to obedience. Three words. They're very simple words, but they encapsulate obedience. Here's the three. Quickly, sweetly, and they don't want to say completely. Quickly, sweetly, and completely. If my children are going to obey me, they're going to obey me quickly, sweetly, and completely. It means they're going to do what they're supposed to do, and they're going to do it right away. Because otherwise, it's not obedience. I want to tell you, your children love to control. And sometimes in our parenting methods, we teach them that they are in control. We do things like this. If I have to tell you one more time, have you ever found yourself saying that? If you've said that, then what you've taught them is that they can actually dishonor you and disrespect you and disobey you until you raise your voice and say it for the 14th time. That's what you've taught them. If I have to say it one more time, they're not obeying quickly. If you do the count method, I'm going to tell you what you're actually teaching them. What you're actually teaching them is 3 seconds of disobedience. You're actually teaching them it's okay to disobey for 3 seconds. At the third second, or when I finish doing all of my fractions, at the third second, then you have to obey. My friends, I'd suggest just ask them to obey quickly. They can obey on the first second just as easily as they can obey on the third. But you've got to teach them to obey quickly. Do it right away. Sweetly, do it with the right spirit. Philippians 2:14, do all things without complaining and disputing. If your children gripe, moan, grumble, roll their eyes, then roll them right back. If they argue, if they get angry, if they complain when you tell them what to do, they're really not obeying. They may be complying, but they're not obeying. They have to obey quickly, sweetly, completely, all the way. Half-hearted jobs aren't obedience. You see, where do you get that from? Read 1 Samuel chapter 15. There's a man there named King Saul. He's told to destroy a people group, to utterly place the ban on them, the Amalekites. But instead, he spares the king. He keeps some of the sheep. He likes these goats. Well, I obeyed most of the way. No, Samuel comes to him and says, you disobeyed. Because you did not obey completely. When it comes to honor, children need to learn, this is the key word, obedience. That's the 6-year-old. What about the 36-year-old? When it comes to this commandment, honor your father and mother, when it comes to honor for the young adult, what is it that they need to learn? I would suggest this. When it comes to the young adult and they're going to learn to honor, they need to learn respect. What happens in the course of parenting is this. Your ability to demand things from your children. And you can demand. When they're 2 and they're about to stick their finger in that little socket, you can demand something. You can actually physically pick them up and remove them from the danger. You can do that. But when they're 18, you can't really do that. You hurt your back. Try it. It's not worth it. When they're a 2-year-old and they won't listen, you may do this. Or you may even do this. You ever see the air come out of those diapers? I don't even feel it. They smile. They kind of like the feeling, you know? But you may be able to do that, but when they're 18, they don't appreciate it. All right? So you may be able to demand certain things when they're young. That's high demand. Authority comes, obey. But as they get older, that decreases. Now, what I want to suggest is that when they're young, you're not reasoning with them, and they don't care about your wisdom. Have you ever sat down with a two-year-old and tried to impart sage wisdom to them? They start blowing spit bubbles. They don't care. So your influence is very low when they're young, but hopefully through wisdom, your influence gains. So as your ability to demand decreases, your influence and wisdom increases, such that when they're 18, they're actually asking you questions. They want your insight. That's what you're hoping to produce as you parent. But as young adults, when it comes to our parents, what we need to learn is to respect them. We need to respect their influence. We need to respect their wisdom. You see, where do you get this from? In Leviticus chapter 19, verse 3, it gives a restatement of this commandment. In Leviticus 19:3, it says, "Every one of you shall revere his mother and father." Reverence them. Respect them. So to honor when you're young means obedience. When you're a young adult, it means respect, reverence, revere. Into adulthood, what happens as young adults? And maybe this has happened to you. When you become a young adult, maybe later teens into the young adult age, you begin to see the faults and the flaws in your parents. I mean, kids don't see them yet. We're good at disguising our faults and flaws. We even trick them into thinking it's their fault that we have faults and flaws, you know. But as you get older, all of a sudden they start seeing your faults and your flaws. They see that you messed up in your child rearing. They see they're the firstborn and they realize that they were the guinea pig. They see that your discipline was not always consistent and your values were not always perfect. They realize that your time spent with them may have been inadequate. They see your inconsistencies, faults, flaws, deficiencies, and in that they are prone to disrespect you. Maybe you've struggled with this with your own parents. You've struggled respecting them because you've seen through some of the things. They're broken people. They're not perfect. They're weak people. They're really not super strong like we once thought they were. They're inconsistent people. And you begin to see that about your parents, and what you really struggle with when it comes to honor is respecting them. You struggle respecting their position. You struggle respecting their opinions. You struggle with it. We live in an era where we'd much rather trade out the old for something new. We're all into the cool, the young, and the fresh. Al Mohler put it this way. He says, "We live amidst the dishonor of an age that dishonors old things." And that happens with our parents. We begin to dishonor them because we see through some of their brokenness. I want to ask you something. Do you respect your parents? So we have a lot of young adults in here. Do you respect your parents? Do you value their opinions? Do you ask them for input? Do you respect them simply because of their position? Do you respect them simply because of their age? Have you ever thought this about old people? Old people have borne the image of God in this earth for a lot of years. And that deserves respect. Some of us here, this is a hard one, I'll tell you why. Because some of us here have come to realize that our parents actually, they weren't just deficient, they were actually rotten. I don't know all of your parents, but some of you probably have parents that were bad parents. There's a lot of bad parents in this world. And so you sit there and you think, I don't know how I could respect my dad. I don't know how I could respect my mom. I'm supposed to respect them? That's the thing that goes through your mind. And this commandment says, honor your father and mother. How am I supposed to do that? We have something in the military. I'm in the Air Force. I'm a chaplain. We have a statement in the military, and it goes something like this. Salute the uniform. Now, you may think that's trite, and what that means is you look at what they've got right here, and you salute the uniform. You may not be able to salute that person because there are some stinky people in the military, just like there's stinky parents in life. And you may not be able to respect that person because they're not respectable, but you respect their position. Salute the uniform. Give honor because God in his providence has placed them as your parents. So if nothing else, then respect them for their position. And then I'd take you a step further and I'd say this. If you are struggling so much with your parents, I'd ask you to do one thing. Try to find one single thing about them that you can respect. One thing. You may be able to take 99 and throw it in the trash can. They were terrible parents. They walked out of me. They hurt me. They abused me. They weren't there for me. They didn't take care of me. Find one thing you can respect about your parents and settle your respect there. And I want to challenge you to do something else. Once you find that one thing, look for a second. You may not be able to grab the whole thing. They may be dishonorable people. They may be irrespectable people, but find something you can place your respect on about them. And if for nothing else, it's for their position. I want to tell you something. This hits close to home because I watched my mom do this. My grandfather, his name was George Kerminsky. He's dead now. My grandfather, it was actually my mom's stepdad. Her biological dad walked out on the family. Her stepdad came in. His name was George Kerminsky, and he was an abusive alcoholic. He was a binge drinker. He would work construction, get a paycheck. He would disappear for days on end and just drink away his paycheck, leaving the family with nothing. My mom grew up in a home where that was like that. They were glad when he was gone because if he wasn't gone, he was going to be home drunk. And if he was home drunk, then he was going to be hurting people. He was going to be burning things. My mom talked about how they would bring their school books home, but that only happened for a while because when they would bring their school books home, then her dad would be drunk and he would just burn their stuff. He'd take their school books and chuck them into the fire. He'd beat them. They had escape routes in the house. They had ways to get out when he was violent. That's how my mom grew up. And I remember my grandfather, it's a long story, but he passed out on a binge drinking run. He passed out on a preacher's doorstep. Believe it or not, this is the honest truth. They brought him in. He sobered up there. They shared the gospel with him. And I think he received Christ as his Savior. But he carried so much guilt and so much regret for the life that he lived. He was inoperable in normal society. And so what he did is he moved up to northern Minnesota. He bought a cabin that only had electricity every once in a while, with no phone, and he lived as a hermit up there. This is my grandfather. I have one thing from my grandfather. It sits on my son's dresser. Only one thing. And it's a beaver pelt. He turned into a trapper, a hermit, and that's the only thing I have from my grandfather. He lived alone. Well, the reason I'm telling you this story is because I watched my mom give respect to someone who was irrespectable and give honor to someone who was dishonorable. Because in his later years, he had needs. He was a hermit. He wanted no relationship with anybody, didn't talk to anybody. But in his later years, my mom was one of the primary caregivers for this man. This man who wasn't her biological dad, this man who had been an abusive father, this man who was a drunk, this man who had brought harm and shame and hurt to her and her life. She turned and tried to find something to respect and something to honor. And she placed her eggs in that basket. And that's what she did. This commandment doesn't give us an out. I mean, I think sometimes what we'd like to read out of this commandment, honor your father and mother as long as they're honorable. We'd love to do that. We'd love to say, honor your father and mother as long as you feel like it. We'd love to do that. Honor your father, but not your mother, because you know how she is. We'd love to do that. But you can't do that. It says, honor your father and mother. That's what it says. And so some of us at this stage of our life, what we're really struggling with is learning how to respect our mom and dad. Ask them for their opinions. Seek their advice. Be careful how you speak of them, and be careful how you speak to them. Pay them the reverence they deserve, if for nothing else, because of their position as your parents and because of their age as image bearers. Children need to learn obedience. Young adults need to learn respect. Here's the last one when it comes to honor. Older adults need to learn to care for their parents. Because remember, we're talking about honor your father and mother. So children are going to honor by obeying. Young adults are going to honor by respecting. Senior adults, older adults, You're going to honor your aged father and mother by caring for them. You say, where do you get this? I want to take you to the book of Matthew chapter 15. Matthew chapter 15. In Matthew chapter 15, Jesus is scorned by the Pharisees because he breaks a man-made tradition, literally the tradition of washing your hands before you eat. I know that may have been your mom's rule, but it wasn't part of the Old Testament law. You didn't have to do that. But the Pharisees came down on Jesus and said, you're breaking the traditions. He looked at them and said, you're breaking the law. So they said, you're breaking man's traditions. And he said, you're breaking God's law. And how did he describe it? In Matthew chapter 15, he says, you're breaking the law because you're not caring for your older parents. Notice it says in verse number 4, God commanded, honor your father and your mother. And whoever reviles father and mother must surely die. But you say, if anyone tells his father or mother, what you would have gained from me is given to God, he need not honor his father. So for the sake of your tradition, you have made void the word of God, you hypocrites. Well did Isaiah prophesy of you when he said, this people honors me with their lips, but their hearts are far from me. In vain do they worship me, teaching as doctrine the commandments of men. What's going on here? Well, there was this tradition. It was called Corban, and you can read about it in the parallel passage in the book of Mark, chapter 7. But there was a tradition called Corban. And what you could do is you could take your savings. So take your 401k, take whatever pension you have, take these things, and what you would say is, I dedicate these to God when I die. Now, I have access to my 401k, and I have access to my pension plan to benefit me, but unfortunately, it's been dedicated to God, so I really can't take care of my aged parents with it. Sorry, Mom and Dad, I just don't have anything for you. Well, you sit with $1 million in the bank in your pension. That was called Corban. That was a practice that they were doing. It was a loophole that they were trying to create, a tradition whereby it could look really spiritual. I've dedicated this to God. It looks really spiritual, but what they're actually doing is they're dishonoring their parents, and Jesus calls them on the carpet. He looks at grown adults, and he says, you are not keeping this commandment to honor your father and mother because you are not caring for them in their old age. Now, I want to say something here because this is important. Not all of us are going to be able to house our parents when they're old. Not all of us are going to be able to. I remember a preaching professor, his name was Haddon Robinson. He was talking in one of our classes, and I remember him saying, you know, we tried to care for my father. He got Alzheimer's disease. And we have Alzheimer's, you begin to lose functionality and memory and ability in certain ways. But he was doing things. They tried to bring him into the home and care for him. But he began to take his clothes off. He began to leave the house and get lost. He began to turn the stove on and forget about it, or the iron. He began to forget certain things about safety and functionality in the home. And at the end of the day, they just couldn't care for him. They tried. They couldn't do it. Now you say, were they honoring him when they put him into a home that could care for him? Yes, they were honoring him. But I'm going to tell you what is dishonoring to parents is when you stick them into a nursing home and you don't visit them. Do you realize that 60% of nursing home patients each year get no visitors? That's dishonoring your father and mother. Some of us think it's the state's responsibility or the pension's responsibility or someone else's responsibility to care for our aging parents. But I'm going to look you in the face and I'm going to tell you it's your responsibility. That's what Jesus says. Honor your father and mother. Care for your aging parents. Maybe it means you have to send money home. Maybe it means you have to get someone to mow their lawn. Maybe it means you need to go visit them. Maybe it means you remember their anniversary. You need to write them a letter. Maybe it means you need to call them. But honor your father and mother in their aging years. I want to tell you something that struck me this week when I read this. This was by Alistair Begg. He wrote, we expect kids to take care of us, to keep the fifth commandment when we are old. Now listen how this is going to turn on us. Just listen to this. We expect our kids to keep the fifth commandment towards us, to care for us when we're old. But we'll probably end up reaping what we sow. We want them to take care of us when we are in diapers. Do you know how the next statement goes? But perhaps we didn't take care of them when they were in diapers. We want them to slow down the pace of their lives and treasure the final years. But we were unwilling to slow down the pace of our lives and treasure the early years. We want them to keep us in their home and love us and talk to us. But we didn't do that with them. Instead, we let someone else feed them and change them and teach them and talk to them. We were too busy making money and advancing our careers. That's what we'll reap. We'll rot alone in a nursing home with no visitors while our kids busy themselves making money and advancing their careers. It's a tragedy, one we're guilty of, and one we're likely to pay for. Isn't this interesting? We will reap what we sow when it comes to the fifth commandment. What's the importance of honor? I want to close this up. What's the importance of honor? If children don't learn to submit to authority in the home, where will they learn it? My friends, if they don't learn to submit to authority in the home, then our society at large is on its way to destruction. Destroy the home, you'll destroy civilized society. But more than that, destroy the authority in the home, they'll never learn to submit to God. If children don't learn to obey God, then at the end of the day, they're going to be displeasing to Him. They need to learn to obey their parents, and by so doing, please the Lord. Colossians 3:20 says, "Children, obey your parents in all things, for this is well-pleasing to the Lord." It pleases God. Ephesians chapter 6 says, "Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is," what's the next word? Right. It's just right. It's the law of oughtness. Children ought to do this. That's why it's important. It's also important because well-being and longevity are linked to it. I'm about out of time, but I want to encourage you. If you look at the last part of the fifth command, it says that you may live long in the land which the Lord your God gives you. As it's repeated in Deuteronomy and as it's repeated in Ephesians 6, it basically universalizes the principle and says that it may go well with you, that you may live long. If you want to have well-being and longevity in your life, the principle is this: then keep the fifth commandment. That's the principle that's given in Scripture. All these reasons or motivations highlight the importance of the fifth command. But I want to tell you something. They really don't help us keep it. Oh, it's important. Yeah, but for most of us, it's impossible. It's important. Yeah, but for most of us, we're guilty of not fulfilling it. And that's where the law fulfills its purpose. The law is supposed to be a muzzle that restrains us. And so some of you this morning have heard, honor your father and mother, and all of a sudden the dishonor that you have been committing has found a muzzle. You're like, I need to stop doing that. The law is a muzzle to restrain our sin. The law is a mirror. For some of us, we've looked in the mirror and we've found, wow, I am a dishonoring child. I have not been obeying or respecting or caring for my parents. I need to start. It showed us a mirror of who we are. But I want to tell you the final function of the law. The law isn't just a muzzle and a mirror. It's a map. You see, the law points us to someone who has fulfilled it. You see, no one has completely, utterly, and perfectly fulfilled the fifth commandment except one person. Who is that? It is Jesus. Do you know He is the only one who ever fulfilled perfectly the fifth commandment and honored His father and mother? It is a fascinating story to read the life of Jesus. He honored both His heavenly Father as well as His earthly father and mother. I think it's interesting. As a child, He submitted to Mary and Joseph, Luke 2:51. And Jesus went down with them and came to Nazareth and was submissive to them. Can you imagine being a perfect child with sinful parents? Wow, that would be hard. But He was submissive to them. As a child, He obeyed. He grows older. You get to John chapter 2, and as a young adult, He respected His mom. In John chapter 2, they're at the wedding of Cana. If you remember the story, Mary says, it says, when the wine ran out, the mother of Jesus said to Him, "They have no wine." Jesus said to her, "Woman, what does this have to do with me? My hour has not yet come." His mother says to the servants, do whatever he tells you. Can you see a mom doing this? A mom comes up to her son and says, hey, here's a problem. And it's not like, oh, for your information, FYI. No, it's, hey, there's a problem. I'd like you to do something about it. That's what Mary is telling him. And he's like, my hour's not yet come. And she goes, just do what he says, and walks away. You can see Mary do it. And why does she do that? Because she knows he's going to do it. Just do what he says. And she walks away. And what happens? He performs his very first miracle. He respects the wishes of Mary. And there he performs his very first miracle, turning water into wine. And on that day, his disciples believed in him. He obeyed. He respected. Have you ever thought about how Jesus cared for his aging parents? Now, it seems as though Joseph died when he was young. But at the cross, his mother is there. And I don't know if you remember this. It's John chapter 19, verse 26. Standing by the cross of Jesus were his mother and his mother's sister, Mary the wife of Clopas, and Mary Magdalene. And when Jesus saw his mother and the disciple whom he loved standing nearby, he said to his mother, woman, behold your son. And he said to the disciple, behold your mother. And from that hour on, the disciple took her into his own home. Do you see what he did? Even from the cross, he cared for his mom and made sure there was someone to look after her in her old age. From that time on, she lived in John's home and was cared for. Jesus kept the law perfectly, and then he died for our imperfections. He paid the penalty for our breaking of the fifth commandment, and then he credited our account with his spotless record of obedience, respect, and care. All of that, my friends, is grace. That, my friends, is the glory of the gospel. Because where we failed to keep the law, Jesus kept it perfectly. And for those who turn to him in faith, he'll apply his record unto their life. So what must we do? Well, we must receive his grace. Perhaps you're here and you've been a little bit more like the prodigal son, the one who dishonored parents and ran away. Well, then in the midst of your muck and mire, in the pig slop, come to your senses and realize the grace of your heavenly Father. Run back to him in repentance and let him change you into the person you're supposed to be. Let his Spirit empower you to do what it is you're supposed to do. And by his grace, live in obedience to this command.